For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Dragon Bodhisattvas here in the somewhat cool Lincoln Square Zendo, and however you are in the cloud. It's nice to see everyone. I don't think anyone here is here for the first time, yet we have quite a group, so I'm happy to see everyone. So, apparently, this coming Wednesday morning, we officially begin what is known as Rohatsu Sesshin. And because there seem to be so many experienced Zen folk here, you probably all know what Rohatsu Sesshin is, but just in case, you can't Google it immediately. It's a 5-day for us intensive meditation retreat where we pay homage to Shakyamuni Buddha's great awakening. And I must say, this cool weather and waning light, increasing darkness, is a great encouragement for us to turn inward. And it is our Zen family tradition to have this intensive period of focused Zazen. And this connects us to Buddha, all the way back to Buddha in India, somewhere 500-600 BC, who knows really. And to all of our ancestors, you could say, past, present, and future. It's a pretty rare thing to be able to sit in Sesshin in an extended sitting where we support each other to gather our minds, to be present moment after moment after moment, presencing, showing up, however we are. Some days, a few days, if you're sitting the whole sesshin, a few days into it, you might feel a little ratty. You know, like some Zen teachers, they always look kind of spiffy the entire sesshin. I don't know how they do it. But some people get kind of ratty. So that's okay. We just support our rattiness, our tornness, our shabbiness. And even if you're not sitting in the zendo, in the cloud zendo, or in the physical room zendo here in Lincoln Square, of course you're still part of the sesshin. Everyone's joining our party, even if it's not apparent. And also, if you'd like to just dip your toe in a little bit to sesshin, on any day of those 5 days, beginning Wednesday, ending next Sunday, there'll be 9:30 Zazen and 10:15 Dharma talk. No registration required. You can just come into the Dragon Zen room and join us. I highly recommend it. So for me, I don't know where the sesshin begins and ends. I often feel like my entire life is just one endless sesshin. But even more so, in the past week or so, I want to thank the Wednesday morning group this week for a great discussion that's inspired this Dharma talk. And I apologize if I repeat something. But you're actually welcome to repeat any of your comments too, because they were really great. You know, on Thursday I mentioned I was in kind of moving already into Sesshin mode. And for me, this means starting to put worldly affairs aside. You know, paying my bills, cleaning my house, trying to stay healthy and not get a respiratory virus, which is a gift this season, can happen. And swimming in a little extra zazen and dharma study. And there is this task, you know, now that I'm in this guiding teacher role, of trying to take care of the sangha needs around Rohatsu. So everybody's been getting, you know, emails from me. I don't know about you, but I'm not a giant lover of email. And so I apologize for bombarding people who are helping with the Sesshin with it. But during Sesshin, I hope not to even look at email. We'll see. I've also been washing my robes and eating bowls. And this morning I'd like to offer some old school Zen from China in the form of a scroll with a verse from the 13th century. Yeah, Douglas, it's right here. I'm going to distribute it soon. And Bo's going to screen share it soon. This scroll. So instead of doom scrolling, I was art scrolling. The scroll has a little verse, which is we'll start with. And then if I have a little time, there's a companion teaching story from 9th century China that I thought goes along with it. So I thought we could start with the scroll and maybe the verse. So I think Bo will screen share some things, and I'll hand out something I printed off that has the verse and the scroll on the other side. Yeah. And you may need to adjust your screens to, you know, and on your personal devices. And I wish we had better lighting in the room or a better printer, because what I handed out is a little bit indistinct. But this is also part of the way this depiction was intentionally made. So in my art scrolling, people can share. I'll share with Paul. You can share with each other. You think that's all I have, though? Extra. Maybe Jerry could take one. You have one? Everybody's got one? Both? You have one in front of your face.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. So this masterpiece comes from the Metropolitan Museum of Arts in New York's recent acquisition of Asian art page. And this piece is not yet on display. It's called Mending Clothes by Daylight. And it's in the public domain. It's just amazing, these images. It said you could even use them for commercial purposes. So this is a I don't think we're going to sell this, although maybe this would help our coffers at Ancient Dragon to take art off the internet and sell it. But I think, you know, it's given freely here at Ancient Dragon. One thing I noted about this piece is that it was bought with money, I think gifted to the Met by someone named Robert Ellsworth. And if anyone knows who Robert Ellsworth is, he was a famous, dead now, I think he died in like 2013 or 14, but really a 20th century lion of Asian art collection. He had a 20-room apartment in Manhattan full of his art that he probably came by in various ways. So I think of this piece wasn't purchased by him, but it was purchased with money left over from his estate, I guess, given to the Met. And it reminds me of just the complicated nature of our lives. You know, this is someone who was a scion of wealth and privilege, and yet preserved and took care of this beautiful collection of art, and then gave money to continue that endeavor. So I think it's always interesting to think about the complicated nature of our life, which is what this piece, this drawing is about. The person who's the curator at the Met, who wrote about this piece of this depiction of a monk mending his robes, calls it an eloquent expression of the playful, or eloquent expression of the playful and elegant minimalism of medieval Chan Buddhist art. And we continue this eloquent expression, you know, we're quite loquacious at Ancient Dragon about the Dharma. And there's a playful elegance, even in our wabi-sabi zendo. The name of this artist is lost to time. Maybe somebody will figure it out. But this painting also has a verse written by a Chan abbot, whose name I will attempt to pronounce, Shirjue Dao Tong. And Dao Tong's poem reads, as you can see on the screen, "Mending rips and tears, robes mostly tattered. It's like chasing clouds. Where to begin? The needle glints in the rays of the setting sun. Yet one must still squint." So this is our world, this tattered robe, you know, our earth, our hearts that can be broken, ripped, torn. And in some ways, you can kind of see this monk has a robe, mending it. You know, when you mend robes or long pieces of things, fabric, sometimes you use something called a third hand to hold the fabric taut so you can mend it. Can you see that here? And Bo, if you want to point out that, if you can use a pointer. Or can I? I don't know. Yeah, you've got one there. I can see yours.
Really?
Or is it mine? Yeah, there you are.
Mm-hmm. I have a pointer?
I can see it. Did you point at something?
Oh, this thing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought there was something fancy.
Yeah, no, it looks pretty good.
Yeah.
But, you know, where to begin? And I think many of you know this story, but I'll mention it again because it's very sweet, related to our Sangha. So not this summer, but the past summer, a group of us went to Tassajara, and a mountain monastery in Northern California. And I was given the task during work, the ridiculous task, because I know nothing about sewing, to lead a group of people. And it turned out, I think there were at least 7 or 8 people, which is unheard of to have that many extra people to do this bizarre task. We went back behind the Zendo into a closet where they stored old robes that monks had been wearing at Tassajara. You know, when you come, you're supposed to wear a robe, but if you don't have one, you can go in the closet and get it. But people who donate these robes or have worn these robes are really shabby and torn. So it was my job to lead the sewing crew. And every day during work period, we got these robes out. We identified the tattered parts of them, broken and ripped, torn, shredded in some cases, and fashioned patches from bags of rags. Like, these were not like, gee, I went to the store and got a great patch I can just iron on. These are a bunch of old bags of rags that we'd have to be like, well, I guess this kind of matches that black or blue color. And spent the afternoon work period sewing together. And everyone in that sewing group seemed, and even Tassajara, like people started to come by during work period. They'd leave their jobs and they'd come in to see what was happening in this sewing factory where we were caring for these ancient robes. And the end, the group of sewers wrote blessings for each robe we worked on. There might have been 12 or so. And put them back in the closet for whatever monk might show up who needed a robe. And, you know, even these robes, right? We have these long sleeves that priests wear that are kind of fashioned after this ancient Chinese clothing. But where to begin? You know, most of us don't wear clothes so long that we repair them. Although I did hear that Wade, who's a monk at Tassajara now, our beloved Wade, held a class at Tassajara for mending during a day off. But, you know, when you wear things, especially robes, for a while, they do start to fall apart, especially if you wear them every single day. And it's not always clear where to begin. And I think this is probably true in our lives for the shredded society that we live in, for the fabric of our hearts, relational fabric, people we've had difficulties with or hurt or been hurt by. You know, where to begin? And then this needle glints in the rays of the setting sun, yet one must squint. So this needle is a needle of wholeness. You know, there's so many of these images in Zen of moon, right? The heron hidden in the moonlight, a silver bowl filled with snow. You know, that within this vast, boundless world of emptiness, where does form and this vastness, how does that interplay happen within the light of wholeness? Can we distinguish the world arising and fading? But here, instead of moon, there's sunlight and warmth, and maybe even heat and fire of this vast universe. You know, maybe this is the light of Vairochana Buddha, the abiding light Buddha, right? This stunningly bright flow of reality. we can't quite see it clearly or know where to begin. And this is also sashin, this squinting in the midst of reality, sometimes called dharmakaya. We just take care of our cushions and our meals and our clothing, not quite always knowing where to begin. So I thought even in this image, we could just look at the image a little bit. The needle, the thread, I don't know if it's visible on screen. You know, even the style, this style of, that's great. The style of painting, let's say, is done with diluted ink. So it says in the description on the mat that the mat provided, so that you almost, there's this hint of the ephemerality of our existence, of this world of form. But I think you can see this beautiful, graceful line of thread, and the needle is so sharp. Now, if you can see that, it's very light, this thread, but if you follow the needle. And the fingers, even of this monk, are so delicate. And the monk is sort of a little tattered looking, right? Balding head, not even shaved to disguise, you know, lack of hair. And kind of like a COVID-like beard, you know, kind of unshaven. And these beautiful, the folds of the fabric, you know, so beautifully and carefully drawn. So, and sleeve and mouth, not quite the decorum that we often think of, but a very natural act. I think someone said last week, this person, this monk looked so thrilled, you know, just enjoying this activity, taking care of the robe. So we could stop right here, but I'd like to offer a companion piece from the record of Dongshan, several centuries before. I'll say something else about this too. Before I get to Dongshan, I couldn't quite track things down, but this, quote, prominent Chan abbot, Shi Jue Dao Chong, apparently lived on the mountain that Dogen's Chinese teacher lived, just before maybe... before or after Dogen got there, I don't know, maybe after, which to me is sort of an interesting Zen coincidence, but I don't want to get too caught in that rabbit hole. I want to quickly move on to the record of Dongshan. And, you know, this monk mending in the daylight or sunlight is an image that I've seen several scrolls of, but in my personal feeling, this is maybe the most amazing one that I've seen. But it was a common image of mending, because I think this is just what you did. You know, you had to take care of your clothes. Couldn't quite go, call up Amazon, you know, to have your robes shipped to you. So here's a little story that goes along with this. From Dongshan, the record of Dongshan for all you. Maybe we can not screen share anymore. Mm. Thank you, Bo. Mm-hmm. Record of Dongshan. Now, Taigen has written, of course, a book about Dongshan, just this is it. just the sewing your robes is it. Well, I don't know if that's what it is, but and we'll say a lot more. We can say a lot more about that in future seminars at Ancient Dragon. But I'll just tell this little story. Story of two Dharma friends, monk friends on the road. Dongshan, the Chinese founder of our school, our Saodong, Dongshan, Dong Mountain School, and his Dharma friend, Shenchan. So maybe they were stopping over on their peregrinations for the day in a grass hut someplace on a mountain. Who knows? But they were Dharma brothers who spent time hanging out together and walking around these mountains together. Here's a story. It's short. When Shenshan had picked up a needle to mend clothes, Dongshan asked, "What are you doing?" So you're like, well, wasn't it obvious what this person was doing with a needle and thread? But I think that this is maybe how we always approach life. What is going on here? What are we doing? Mending, answered Shenchan. In what way do you mend? Asked Dongshan. And Shenchan replied, one stitch is like the next. You know, just when we sew our Zen garments, one stitch is like the next. Oh, is it? Then there's a little challenge. We've been traveling together for 20 years, said Dongshan, and you still say such a thing? Such nonsense? That you're so literal? And Shenchan says, oh, well, how does the venerable monk Dongshan mend? And Dongshan replies, just as though the entire earth were spewing flame. That's how the story ends. With this whole earth spewing flames. Like, how does that work? That needle spewing flames, the earth spewing flames. This has to be some kind of reference to the fire sermon, the famous third sermon Buddha offered, by some accounts, that described the world as burning with the flames of craving. Burning, says Buddha, with the fire of lust, with the fire of hate, with the fire of delusion. I say it is burning with birth, aging, and death, with sorrows, with lamentations, with pains, with griefs, with despairs. These are the words of Buddha. Those ancient words are just like today, right? We see this, more of this, less of that. One more, give me one more of something, and that's give me, the right president, the right cabinet, the right meal. And it never satisfies, right? Like the painting of the rice cake. So I think this is also this question of how do we mend an earth that's on fire? How do we mend a life that is on fire? There's another side to this, that many sides. This is a jewel of a teaching. How do we How do we mend? Like Dongshan suggests, just as the whole earth were spewing flames. Could be thought of like with complete Zen-like attention, like your head is on fire, you know, like you're putting your complete energy. I think it kind of means both things. Taking on the world of our life, also known as the world of suffering, where we want more or less all the time, but also bringing this kind of warm, energetic attention, this fierce fire caring for a world that is flames, one, a world that can never be fixed. You know, maybe all we do is mend this human life that's always falling apart. So, to come back to just a little bit of Dogen, translated by Taigen in Ehei Kuroku from a Dharma Hall discourse, which Taigen, I'm sure it was Taigen, I don't know if Taigen's here, I guess not, but I could verify with him, but I think he gave it this title. He translated the Ehei Kuroku with Shohaku Akamura, but this sounds very Taigen-like. Sitting with eyes open in the flames of the world. So this is the title of this discourse. And the capping verse, or the little poem at the end of this little talk by Dogen in 13th century Japan. Having recently visited 13th century China, Dogen said, "The Buddha ancestors transmit Zazen facing the wall. The eye that sees before anything happens can open before anything happens. Just like the lotus blossom in the flames in the 12th month." So this 12th month is our month of Urhatsu, and I think this is referring to the flames of Buddha's awakening. And this is our work as bodhisattvas, our effort, opening our eye of practice within a ring of fire, within blazing emptiness and blazing human craving. And we show up to life and we take our needles out and we squint and we pick a spot to mend. And this week, in this 12th month of Urhatsu, which of course means the 8th day of the 12th month, celebrating Buddha's awakening, the dragon bodhisattvas will sit like lotuses in the midst of flames. We'll be lotuses of wisdom and compassion in the midst of the fire of our craving. It'll be too cold or too hot for some in the Zendo. We'll want more or less of something. And these Rohatsu Bodhisattvas will also be flames with our craving, circling the lotus of the Dharma, you know. So this is all of our burning craving will be witnessed by the kindness of Zazen. So much more could be said about needles and sunlight and tatters and lotuses and flames, but enough for me. We'll converse a bit, then we'll have tea, and then we'll get our shabby temple and shabby selves ready for Urhatsu. So thank you all very much. And everyone's welcome to keep their little piece of scroll. And anyone else can find it on the Met's website. So, bodhisattvas, bring forth your comments, and thank you very much for your presence here today. Eve.
have a question. So is he mending the robe while he's wearing it?
Yeah, looks like it.
Was that a common practice?
I don't know.
Well, you didn't do that when you guys were doing the robes in the closet, right?
Not that I noticed. But I think it could easily be done on a sleeve like this. Might be easier. You know? I sometimes will take my sleeve and attach it with a pin to something like a tablecloth or even my pant leg so I can get a little tension. So maybe we need a little tension to mend. David Ray, Bodhisattva.
Eve's question makes me think maybe it's his only robe, and so maybe that's why he wears it while he mends it. Sort of like the way that, you know, if you're on a boat, you have to repair it. You can't dry dock it, and sort of like life, you can't get out of it to fix it. You have to fix it from inside it.
And it has to float. If it's a boat, it has to float.
It has
while
to keep floating.
It. Yeah, I forget the point. Quoted somebody else. There's a quote about science is like a boat that you have to fix.
And see what happens when we think. When we think, oh, we'll just get another one. We'll just buy another one.
Ah.
Buy one more. Let me just ignore all these holes. Maybe I'll invent some plastic, too, while I'm at it.
Yeah, maybe we'll go terraform Mars.
Yeah, we'll go terraform Mars in a big rocket. This mending is serious business. Asian Bodhisattva, welcome back.
Thank you. It reminds me of the phrase that I'm happy not to have participated in yesterday, of building the plane while you're flying it. Except that we all are building the plane while we're flying it all the time, and we're building it for others so that they can one day fly it, you know, for us. And I like the, I like the rays of the setting sun. The sun is setting on this patch-robed monk and his robe, and you know, it's setting on all of us, and we do what we can to hold on.
Sun is setting on all of us. The Bodhisattva plane. Ah, Chris. Hiding back there in the corner.
Good to see you. I remember Paul made some comments about the translation, and help me with this. I think he was kind of saying that, you know, that the robes kind of half torn, so they're not like they used to be. They're no longer new, and they could kind of go either way. You know, the things could get either kind of better or worse with this robe. Which I thought was but mending it is, you were talking about how that's practice.
Yeah. I don't know if Paul wants to comment on your comment, on his comment, but,
thanks for remembering what I said. Totally remember what I said. I think it's partly my job to be annoying about the translations, I guess. But the, as I recall, it says something like you could either read it as it's half the spots to be mended, take up half the robe, or the what has already been mended takes up half the robe, and so the, which I kind of like better, and so whatever the robe originally was, you know, that's gone in the practice of mending, right? In the practice of practicing. And I think I've said something about that, but I liked what Chris said.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Paul. Yeah, so this is a beautiful comment that it's already gone. Like, we're not getting back the original robe, you know? Like, everything is already gone while we're still repairing it, which is really so Zen-like. Don't hold on too tightly, but still, we take care of things. Leo.
Thank you for the talk. I have a thing slightly different, or maybe like an addition to the comments. I think the word squint kind of like stuck with me, particularly because for me, sometimes I go on with life without necessarily paying attention. Mm. And for me, Zazen is like always like a continuation of like squinting. Mm-hmm. I either have to be here, or not have to be here. But like I'm practicing, and then I realize when I practice, I squint. Mm. And sometimes I also get upset for not squinting. So it's kind of like, that's what it stuck out to me, is the squint.
If I understand you, it's kind of like seeing things more clearly with attention.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Focusing, you know, focusing, making an effort to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. Okay. Well, I think this is probably enough for today. Join us for Sesshin if you're up for it. And thank you, everyone, for your wonderful presence. And let's see. I think we'll do some vows. I'm going to sign off. And then announcements. How's that?
Beings are numberless, we have to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, we vow to collect through them. Dharma gates are boundless, we vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable, we allow to realize it. Things are numberless, we allow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, we allow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless, we vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable, we vow to realize it. Beings are numberless, we vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, we vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless, we vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable, we vow to realize it.